Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me.
And good morning, good morning, good morning. This is your host, Dr. Terry Mason, the show The Doctor in the House, heard every Sunday, right here on WVON. We've got a great show for you today. I want to also welcome my co-host today, Kareem Watson. Dr. Watson, are you with us?
Good morning, Dr. Mason. Yes, sir, I am on the call.
Okay, great. Well, I want to just take a couple minutes at the beginning of the call because I just wanted to put something out there. This is my own personal story. I want to make sure I was, and yesterday as I was also looking at and trying to be participatory with the passing of Minister Louis Farrakhan's wife, Sister Khadija, who was a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful person. And we'll be missed sorely. You say, well, wait a minute. What does that got to do with anything? Well, let me tell you something. If it had not been for the Nation of Islam, I never would have become a physician. Never. Why? Because the encouragement I got to do this and the support that I got from this came from them. Now, it wasn't even some money support, but it was support to help me understand where to go look, how to find it, and then use it. And I'm grateful for not just the nation, because the nation gave me the impetus to want to be part of the program where we're going to build a hospital on the south side of the city of Chicago, a hospital that was not done because there were a number of things politically that did not want it to happen, zoning things. And I was there. I was part of it. So I knew exactly what was going on. So it never came to fruition. Doesn't mean that we don't need it, but it does mean that there's still more work for us to be done. I'm grateful to see that we have a number of federally qualified health centers like the one Dr. Watson is going to talk to us about later, but these have been very, very helpful. They're not hospitals, but they are can do a number of things, and we should learn to leverage them as much as we possibly can and support them. The one at Mile Square is run by Dr. Henry Taylor, and I really want to make sure people take advantage, and I'm sure Dr. Watson will talk about what the FQHC does and why it's different than just going to a regular doctor's office. That being said, I wanted to make sure that, people look at you and they think, you know, that look at the things that God has been able to allow me to do. But I have to tell you that my inspiration came from sixth grade science teacher at the Carrie Jacob Bond Grammar School on the south side. And it was during that that the science teacher there, Mr. Lewis Wright, was the science teacher. And I just want to say this because you never know how it, and what will help stimulate a child. And it and this not only just stimulated me, but a number of other students that were in our class back in the fifth grade at the Carey Jacob Bond School right there at 71st and May. And those teachers really, and I'm sending this out to really say to the teachers, past and present, thank you for whatever inspiration you can provide for the students, because Lord knows our students need it today. We need to know and hear more positive messages and see more positive activities than we've seen in the past. And so we want to make sure that we're going to spend a little time talking about that, but I do want to bring it up because it's so very important. We won't have anybody going into college if we're not having them adequately prepared in grammar school. And we're seeing that in some of the programs that I work with, which is called a program that I've been working with for some time. And it's called Creating Pathways for Academic Student Success, or CPAS. And we're trying to make sure that we do a better job in creating a better environment and a better foundation based on a number of things. And I'll have one of the directors on at some point to give you all the details. But we need to work together. And the other thing is that we were going to, and I'm going to stop this in just a minute. The other thing is that we were also trying to build a hospital on, I say, we, the Nation of Islam at that time. And that was my impetus for going to medical schools was when I was there and I used to get the picture from the newspaper, the Muhammad Speaks newspaper, with the hospital on it. And it was my piece that I put on my car, put everywhere, because I believe that it could be done. And it didn't get it done that way, but we got a lot, and I got much more out of my experience had I not had that. So I just want to, I'll take a pause there and give Dr. Kareem Watson the time to make some introductory remarks. Dr. Watson.
Thank you so much for that, Dr. Mason. Thank you for grounding this conversation in history. Thank you for reminding us to always honor our elders. And we join with you in honoring the life of Sister Mother Khadija Farrakhan and just the blessing she was. And even in today's segment, as you said at the top of the hour, Dr. Mason, we're very excited and thankful that the first Sundays are co-hosted. We join you on Doctor in the House, co-hosted by the UI Cancer Center, the University of Illinois Cancer Center, as well as UI Health Miles Square, the Federally Qualified Health Center associated with UI Health. And on this first Sunday, each month, we pick a different topic to highlight. And the topic we're going to highlight for today is food as medicine. And we have an amazing guest lined up. But Dr. Mason, in the spirit of honoring Mother Khadija, I have to say, I remember coming to Chicago in my early public health training days and you introducing me to Prince Akil over at Soul Vegetarian East and talking and meeting at the restaurant and talking about the role that food as medicine played. And so I know we have our guest, Dr. Saria Lofton. Are you on the line, Dr. Lofton?
Yes. Can you hear me?
We can hear you just fine. Thank you so much. Okay. Thank you so much. And I hope you've been able to hear the conversation, Dr. Lofton, that we've been talking about.
Yes.
And it's, Dr. Mason would say indirectly, but I think we've directly been talking about the rich history that Chicago carries when we think about food as medicine and culture and care for our people through how we feed them and nourish not just their souls, minds, but our entire body. So thank you, Dr. Lofton, for the work that you have done as a health disparities nurse researcher who has really centered your career, Dr. Lofton, on food as medicine, developing interventions for African-American, Black, and underserved communities, and teaching us how to manage heart disease and other risk factors with a focus on responsive program design, thinking about how do we use digital tools and community-engaged research. And I know currently, Dr. Lofton, you have two active research projects, actually, that are looking at food as medicine, as well as what we sometimes call DASH, which is, I believe, the dietary approaches to stop hypertension. Is that what DASH means, Dr. Lofton?
Yes, it is.
Okay. We often say the word DASH, but I know you use a lot of the DASH framework in your food as medicine and in the NIH R01 funding that you have. And then also thinking about cooking skills and other things and the food as medicine approaches for even for Black breast cancer survivors as a member of the UI Cancer Center and the work that you've done. And it's been first deployed in the Grace Kitchen. And so you've done so much, Dr. Lofton. I just want to thank you for joining us today and thank you for the work that you're doing. And I'm going to start off by asking you, tell our listeners about how did you even get to this approach? I know you're a Chicagoan, a native Chicagoan, and a nurse by training, but how did you go from knowing that your career in nursing, you ultimately wanted to go into food as medicine?
Well, it was always a bit of a pull, and thank you for the introduction. It's always good to speak with you, Dr. Watson, and Dr. Mason as well. And it's always been a pull. I started working as a nurse at West Suburban years ago, and I worked in a medical surgical floor. And one thing that always struck me was seeing young Black men and women coming in very young at 20s and 30s with diabetes and hypertension. And that struck me so much. I actually went into school nursing to see, like, can we prevent it on the other side? Because these are diet-related conditions. And so when I went into school nursing, one of the first things I did was we competed for a Hidden Valley Ranch grant where we got a salad bar at one of my schools.
Wow.
Now... It's now
which school
closed,
were you in, Dr. Lofton? Which school were
Victor
you in?
Victor Herbert.
Okay. Shout out to Victor Herbert. If any of those former students or teachers are listening.
Yes. Because it's debt now, I believe. And we had a salad bar as well as a school garden, which was another grant that I received. But I actually was not into food. I received my master's at UIC, and it was around STI, sexually transmitted infections. But then over time, shorten that long story, I found my way back into food by way of the urban agriculture in Chicago, because it was a project I was working on while I was also working in Malawi, Africa on a STI-related project. And then I just started to fall in love with food again and how we can really address some of the ailments that we have in addressing the health disparities through food. And I just met some wonderful people doing qualitative interviews, and it just came to a point where it actually kind of flowed into food as medicine. I always say Orrin Williams is the one that really got me thinking about that. He's retired now, but he is, I call him.
I remember Brother Owen,
the
yes.
Grandfather mm-hmm. of.
I met, yeah, yes.
Of Urban Ag. And so I always see him as my mentor, Angela Odoms Young. It's just so many people who are into that space, and I was able to fit my way in. And so that's what led to the food as medicine work that I'm doing now.
You know,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Mason. Go ahead. Yes, sir.
No, I just want to say that, you know, I've been involved in a number of these kinds of things. Actually, when I was running the health department for both the city and for the county, we had a time where we really tried to get farming done. And show folks how food can be raised out of the ground. We worked in some very kind of poor areas where it was very difficult because they didn't have a really good store to even if they wanted to buy collard greens and spinach and what have you, the quality of it was so poor. So we've been partnered with the same people as you're mentioning to grow this food right there. But we wanted one of the things we had to make sure that we knew was that we had to make sure that we included more elders, because the reason for that is because a lot of the younger people don't know about some of these better foods. Some of these young people that we saw when we were doing our work was that, you know, I grew up, and probably you did, Dr. Watson, and probably the other guests did too, but I grew up with collard greens. I grew up with, you know, yams, and I grew up with foods that we didn't call health foods. They were just the foods that we ate. Some of them may have been cooked with a little more oil than they needed to be, but it was so important to have just that conversation and to help them understand the reason that a lot of the people out there were not doing that well, because the accessibility to fresh produce was not as abundant as it was in other parts. So I'm grateful that the people did as well as they did. And I want to congratulate you and what you're doing, because the problem is, I hear the term food is medicine, but I said if we ate the right food, we wouldn't need that much medicine. The medicine that we're taking is a result of the food that we're taking. And that food is very, very, can be very, very damaging to us, particularly as we look at the number of dialysis centers in our community. We look at the numbers for high blood pressure. We look at the numbers for diabetes. Look at all these things. And I'll stop here. These are all food-related issues. And I'll stop right there.
No, Dr. Mason, I appreciate your input. I appreciate. And I also, Dr. Lofton, love that, as Dr. Mason said, a lot of your work, Dr. Lofton, is actually acknowledging our elders. You talked about Owen. It's a lot of intergenerational work. You talked about the work that Dr. Angela Odoms Young has done. But I want to just revisit for a quick second, because you kind of glossed over it quickly. And then I know what a humble powerhouse you are, but I want our listeners to, I'm going to actually make you brag a little bit, Dr. Lofton, something I know you're totally uncomfortable doing. So I'm going to put you on the spot. But I don't think it's that much of a stretch, the work you did in Malawi, from looking at STIs, sexually transmitted infection, because when I think about the work of colleagues that they're doing, and they're looking at the microbiome, which is just a big word for the environments that our bodies have, right? And how different infections grow due to inflammation and other things. What actually happened in Malawi that made you begin to make that connection to food as medicine, and why? And I think the importance of that work, really kind of that seed being planted in while you were in Africa.
That's a great question. Yes, there were a lot of seeds planted in Africa. And I think what one thing that really struck me was how people ate food and how food actually tasted in Malawi. And it wasn't just Malawi. You know, if you go into Ghana, even Rwanda, the way food tasted there versus the way it tasted here. And also the connection between the types of food that folks eat in sub-Saharan Africa, West Africa, and how it actually matches, it trails a lot of what we eat here. Like, you can see the lineage. You know, and so I found it something that was just really intriguing in terms of people face different health ailments in different parts of Africa versus here. But some of the things that you could really learn from that were healing were present there. And I think that had definitely played a role. And it was something I would definitely talk with Oren about a lot. And, you know, it really helped to even Dr. Akilah Martin. She's another one that works with Oren that is a soil scientist. And these are the conversations we would have around food. And that I absolutely agree. That was the impetus. Also, that was a driver for the work that's being done now.
I love that. No, please, Dr. Mason.
Okay, I wanted to say thank you so much. I spent a lot of time in Ghana, and while I was there, over the many years I went back and forth, I saw transitions happen. I saw the plethora of fast food joints being made available in Ghana. One time I was getting ready, they wanted to take me out to eat some food, and the thing was that the thing was to do was some sort of prestige was to take me to McDonald's for a lunch, And so we had a very robust conversation about that, as particularly as we began to look at the numbers of what was happening there, and this is in Ghana, in hypertension and things of the nature of the way we had the opportunity to get the measurements done and what have you. But a lot of things that are going on, a lot of these things which get interpreted as, oh, this is we should do things because this is the way it does in America, but they don't realize that the danger that's happening if we continue to change them from the kinds of foods. I mean, you know, the kinky and the rice and things of that nature. So I'll stop and let you comment with that, because I got very dismayed when I saw it, because it was looked at a status symbol to be able to go to McDonald's to eat lunch, as opposed
Dr.
to
Mason,
going to
you are,
a local restaurant.
Yeah. You're so on point, Dr. Lofton. I don't know if you remember, call when Dr. Nguyen was here leading the Cancer Center, we had the opportunity to do some work with Mekele in Uganda. And at the time, this was about 7 years ago, and they were hosting, and they invited us. Although we were there studying cervical cancer and looking at lung cancer, they actually invited us back because they were going to have one of the first chronic disease symposiums in East Africa. And to Dr. Mason's point, what was almost sad for me to witness, Dr. Lofton, was that I saw right before my eyes, to Dr. Mason's point, what the westernization of Africa, what was happening. Like, they were incorporating our restaurants, our eating practices into Eastern African culture. And as a result, unfortunately, I don't want to say it's a direct cause and effect, but you almost have to think that it is, because they used to have this conference on infectious disease and communicable diseases. They had to expand it to chronic diseases, thinking about hypertension, diabetes, and heart disease. And you can draw that parallel between the influx of Western diets and American diets in East Africa. And that just blew me away, Dr. Mason, to your point, because I was back here seeing folks like Dr. Lofton trying to tell us, no, let's think about our culture and our lineage and our African culture and our African traditions and our food. And Dr. Lofton, can you talk just about how you said, I want to develop this into interventions. I want to intervene. What was that impetus like for you?
Sure. And I'll briefly comment what you said, because you're absolutely right. Actually, one of my co-investigators in Malawi was studying diabetes because it became more prominent, especially more towards the city. And a lot of the things I experienced were in the village. So it's a very different food dynamics at times. And it's a whole conversation itself. But in terms of developing the intervention, I give credit to Oren on this very much. I started looking into more food as medicine stuff after having discussions with him. And there was this organization called Food as Medicine Coalition, because they do a lot of this work on the East Coast already. And so I just started to learn more about it. It was very, very early on. And initially, a lot of the work they were doing was related to, like, the Ryan White funding for those who were diagnosed or had HIV. And they were able to have, like, a food as medicine type of program for those individuals. And so you would see that they started with the Ryan White funding, and then they kind of expanded into diabetes with this social needs assessment. So once they started finding out people who had food insecurity, and if they were also diabetic, they would have, like, a food as medicine, and it usually with medically tailored meals that they would provide folks to see if it would have an impact on reducing hospital utilization. So that's how I started getting into it, and it expanded beyond just whether you had a chronic disease or not, to just even if you were food insecure and you needed the support, you know. And now we have, for folks who have cancer or who are survivors, hypertension and just expanded more kidney disease. And so that's how I built it. But most of it, I did a pilot, and the work that I did was on Chicago's Food, which is one of our local coalitions, food sovereignty type of coalitions. And this is a lot of input from community members from the qualitative work that I did and working in the initial pilot and getting feedback from those pilot participants to actually build the intervention as it is now.
Yes, it's the 100%. I just want to let our listeners know, if you are listening today and you just joined us, it's the first Sunday and we are very honored and thankful to join Dr. Terry Mason on Doc in the House, with the first Sunday guest being the UI Cancer Center and UI Health Miles Square. And today we are honored to have Dr. Saria Lofton from the UI Cancer Center, as well as the College of Nursing at UIC. And she's talking about the amazing work that she's done in the food is medicine space. And Dr. Lofton, I want for you to tell our listeners a little bit about the Food is Medicine plus the DASH intervention, that project that you're working on. Tell us what it is and why you chose DASH, and what do you hope to accomplish from that?
Sure. So I chose DASH initially, or I chose hypertension initially, because this is an area or health disparity that was most prominently impacting Black Americans, especially in Chicago, and noticing the correlation of the segregation that we have in our communities and how that matches.
When you say hypertension, sorry to cut you off, Dr. Lofton. When you say hypertension, uh-huh. You mean high, that's also the medical term for high blood pressure. Right, right. Okay.
Correct. Sorry, I could sometimes get a little academic. Please.
It's okay. I'll pull you back.
Appreciate it. So, because we have, when we were mapping around food access, one of my projects was mapping around food access, and actually a lot of people have done this. And then if you notice, after the pandemic, a lot of grocery stores left our communities. So in terms of trying to support local entities, that's where the idea of the Food is Medicine DASH intervention came in, because you're thinking, when someone has been diagnosed with hypertension or high blood pressure, diet management is one of the initial things that you can do to support hypertension, high blood pressure management. So we started in South Shore, and we wanted to make sure it stayed local. Now, 40 acres isn't quite local in terms of location from proximity from South Shore to Austin, but it is local in that it's in Chicago. So that was one of
our... What is 40 acres, Dr. Lofton? Some people may not know what 40 acres is. Can you describe what 40 acres is?
Yes, 40 Acres Fresh Market, which now has a store off of Chicago and Central, a beautiful store.
Shout out to 40 honor. Acres that has a new location. Yes.
Yes, and it's the food. So Liz is the owner. She provides delivery of fresh produce boxes throughout the city of Chicago. And so we were able to procure some of those boxes. And you're talking about nice size boxes that could last you for 2 weeks, you know. And this is fresh fruit. It's fresh vegetables. It's delicious. I've had so many compliments on those boxes from 40 Acres Fresh Market. And I have to, you know, commend her for that, because that is something that we deserve, because as Dr. Mason was talking about, the quality of food. And she really has identified that market, how to give high-quality food to our community.
I think that's wonderful. And one of the things that we learned as we were doing the same thing as the Department of Public Health, because when I was running a health department, I took on this issue as a public health issue, because it is. And we need to bring it further to the forefront and get – more folks, and I'm just delighted that you're involved in doing this sort of thing, and that we can get the data that tells us confirms what we already know, that much of what we're having problems from is from the foods that we eat. And some of that is as a result of the places where we live and what's available for people to buy. I mean, when we were over in Ford Heights, it was very difficult to find foods. greens and what have you. But what was even more important and more striking, and one time I'd like to get somebody to do work on this, is there's a generational difference in terms of what people are eating or being exposed to eat. And probably like you, Dr. Watson, I grew up eating collard greens, turnip greens. I grew up maybe with some fried food once in a while, but not much. But we had beans, greens, okra. We had all of that. And when we did some food surveys, a lot of people didn't even know what those things were, had not eaten them. The only ones that had any kind of recall were the seniors. But the younger people, because I grew up eating that, you know, and we ate it because that's what we had to eat, and that's what we learned to do. And it saved us. But now with all of the fast foods and these ready to, all these places where you can go get food, if you want to call it that, instantly, that's not necessarily the best for you. But what? How do you, with what you're doing, if that's part of what your scope is, how do we then bring that information back to the people in a way that they understand that they have a role to play in their own health?
I mean, that's a great question. I think part of it is how we design the intervention, which I'll tell you a little bit more about. So, and along with having the fresh produce, we also have cooking classes. So in our pilot, we had cooking classes every other week. We also talk about nutrition and hypertension on the weeks that we didn't have cooking classes. For this intervention, we'll have cooking classes once a month because we did test that afterwards where we would have folks come once a month. And we have a wonderful chef, Chef Ken Polk from Batters and Berries, who will be helping us in terms of leading the cooking classes, where everyone cooks together, and at the end, you share a meal, and to really build in that community aspect of what we're doing. And then also continuing working with that with a nutritionist, who a wonderful nutritionist, Mona, that I've been working with, who very deep knowledge and is able to do one-on-ones with participants as well as lead nutritional classes.
Well, I'm glad. I just so want glad to highlight to that. I am so glad in medical school, I was went to the University of Illinois from 74, 78. And I tell you that we had one, for nutrition, we had one 30-minute class in 4 years of medical school. And that wasn't really very good because it was only about the deficiency diseases like scurvy and beriberi and, you know, iron deficiency, but that's at extreme. And we had to figure out, and I'll leave this with you, you know, how we begin to bring in the younger people. And because they've got a long time, if they stay here long enough to eat and get the side effects of some of these foods. I'll stop there.
No, Dr. Mason, I so appreciate that. And you always remind us about the intergenerational approach and then the training piece of it, too. And I want to, if you're listening, I want to let our callers know we would love to hear from you. So please give us a call at 773-591-1690. Again, that number is 773-591-1690 to join this wonderful conversation. And Dr. Lofton, as you do a little deeper dive into what you call an intervention, we use these words like intervention and hypertension, but what we're really trying to do in your Food as Medicine project, that you're also using what we call the DASH approach. And for our listeners, DASH is an acronym that stands for Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension, or like I sometimes like to say, Dietary Approaches to Stop High Blood Pressure. I sometimes substitute the H in hypertension, Dr. Lofton, for high blood pressure, but DASH is an evidence-based, meaning that it's been studied by lots of researchers, and they have found that having an approach that looks at food or our diets to stop high blood pressure, when you pair that with the food as medicine approach, Dr. Lofton is studying how that can impact chronic diseases in Black communities. So if someone is taking part in some of the work that you're doing, Dr. Lofton, what can they expect to experience? I heard you talk about the food boxes from 40 Acres, but can you walk us through what a regular day would look like for a month if someone were participating in your project?
Great. So first, we start with folks that have high blood pressure, And one thing we do is we try to support high blood pressure management. So we provide you with a blood pressure monitor and cuff, as well as a scale. And at the beginning of the, and a Fitbit. So just to monitor your activity in the beginning. And the research chief stuff is like some surveys and things like that. And we have this really cool machine. It's called a veggie meter. So it measures like your beta carotenoid level. So it uses your skin. It's non-invasive. And it could tell how many veggies you've had in the last week or so. And it gives a level. And
I want to pause right there. Because you dropping some technology knowledge on us. And you so smart, and I know this is your everyday world, but I'm going to take a quick pause. Did you just say that there is a way, that there's a machine that we can use to actually measure how many vegetables people are eating?
Yes. It hasn't been used widely. Before, you'd have to draw blood. And so this one, it's just... without getting too technical, we'll just say spectrometry. And you just put your finger on it measures the carotenoid level just to see, like,
What are carotenoids?
Oh, so I think about, like, when you have, like, carrots and, you know, the color of that, the beta carotene. So the things that give your veggies color, you can measure through your skin. So that's what you would get. And I'm just using carrots as an example because it is like beta carotene, but all the veggies. And like however many you've been having, and I will have to check how far back it goes, but at that moment in time, it gives a number that or a level based on how many veggies you had and how that's expressed without getting too technical. and we measure it at the baseline, and then we measure it again at the end of the intervention. And so we have it right now in our clinical research center for folks to come and get measured.
That's amazing. And this is why you're one of my favorite researchers, one of my favorite people to talk to, Dr. Lofton, because you are just dropping knowledge and letting people know that you are actually saying, come into my project. I'm going to ask you some questions. I'm going to call them surveys. I'm going to ask you some questions. I'm going to get to know about your family history, other conditions you may have had. And then based on those conditions that you may have had, I'm then going to ask you how much vegetables are you eating each week? You know, how are you getting those vegetables? And I'm going to measure that where you are before you start my project. And then I'm going to let you start my project. My project includes some cooking classes, if I heard that right. My project includes getting some fresh produce delivered to you from, and then talking to some chefs of some amazing restaurants like Batters and Berries, which is a Black-owned restaurant with two locations in Chicago. Shout out to Batters and Berries. I also hear you saying we got amazing nutritionists like Mona, who is a Mona the Amazing. You talked to Mona, and she's also worked in breast cancer survivorship. And then you have these chefs, and all of these partners are coming together to say, all right, now how can everything that we're doing improve your health outcomes? Is that summing it up, Dr. Lofton?
It is. And I also have been working for the past year and a half to create like a web application to continue to support people to continue this journey after the program is over. So when you're getting, some folks will still be getting like their fresh produce, but they won't have the programming. So how do you match what's in your pantry and what's in this fresh produce to make something healthy that you've learned that is DASH friendly? And I've been working on that with some computer science students over the past year and a half, and we are hopeful to roll it out very soon.
I love this. I love the way that you're using this dietary approach to make sure we stop hypertension and to ensure that people are having what we call a heart healthy eating plan that's helping us to lower blood pressure, reduce the risk of heart disease, and it focuses on foods that are, remember growing up, we used to say, eat a rainbow. Do y'all remember that commercial that talked about eating a rainbow? And what Dr. Lofton is saying is that when we think about our plates, our, every day we should be thinking that I should have foods that look like the colors of the earth. I should have foods that are red, foods that are green, foods that are orange, foods that are yellow, right? Those should be foods in on my plate multiple times a day, because in eating those foods, we have a big term for them. We call them nutrient dense, nutrient rich foods, but they have things like potassium, calcium, magnesium, fiber, things that help get, you know, and all of, and they also can help reduce things like sodium. They have low, they're low in sodium, low in bad fats, and low in, and they're not high in those white sugars. So what you're doing is so dope. I just have to say it, Dr. Lofton. Every time I talk to you, I get more and more, become more and more of a fan. So is there a way that people can learn more about your project? If they want to learn more about the project that you're doing, how can they find out about it?
Well, they definitely can reach out to me directly via email, because I'm always on my email, SLOF, like Frank, T like Tom, letter O, number 4, at UIC.edu. And I know that's said that really fast, but...
I'm going to have you say that one more time and say it real slow as if someone's writing it down. What is your email?
Yes. S, like Sarah, L... O, F, like Frank, T, like Tom, O, the letter O, that is, the number 4, at UIC.edu.
All right. And
feel free to also Google information about the project and reach out to me that way as well. I have to look up my project phone number.
That's okay.
I don't want to say
we'll
them
get that before the end of the call. Yeah, we'll get that before the end of the call.
I also want to
highlight for our listeners that what Dr. Lofton's work is actually connected to a lot of community partners. So if you're listening, what you're also hearing is that the rich work that she does not only produces this food is medicine project in the clinical space, but it also connects us back to community partners, to minority-owned food vendors and food stores, chefs and nutritionists. And I also want to encourage you that to connect this back to your primary care doctor. If you are someone who's living with hypertension or have been told you have high blood pressure or you have high cholesterol or that you may be at effect for kidney disease, you need to talk to your primary care doctor. And if you don't have one, feel free to give us a call at Miles Square, at UI Health Miles Square. That number is 312-996-2000. 312-996-2000. And we can connect you to amazing folks like Dr. Lofton. We have nutritionists at Miles Square. We even have a WIC office, which stands for Women, Infant, and Children, to connect you through this work. But I just want to check in right now to also see if we have any callers. Are there any callers on the line? Okay, if not, we're going to keep on flowing. So Dr. Lofton, you also had a project out that was called, that you called Grace. Can you tell me what Grace was and how that informed some of the work that you were doing rooted in soul food and what we call Southern cooking traditions?
So from the pilot, all of this kind of works together. So from the pilot, we talked with participants afterwards to just get their feedback on the intervention, because again, we did the same thing that we are doing now in like a 12-week format, where we had 3 months of fresh food, cooking classes, nutrition support. And so they gave us feedback on things that we can improve to keep going and how we keep people encouraged. So one of those things that we did was to have monthly cooking classes after the pilot ended. But also we had another, but they gave us information about how they cook, and a lot of people did not cook by recipe. We had recipes, but people didn't tend to cook by recipe as much. It was a matter of giving people the food and kind of having it, setting it up in a way where people can easily make a meal without having to do a lot of measurement. And that's really where Grace came from. And so we wanted to make sure that we are tailoring how we approach this with folks in mind that who are going to be doing this work, who are actually going to be in the kitchen and cooking and making these dash-friendly meals. Then we had a Food as Medicine breast cancer survivors pilot, and we piloted using Grace, just a rice bowl. And how do you set up a rice bowl in a Grace method? Would be like, well, you have your rice, that's your base, that grounded in your base. Then you add some real vegetables, and you could have some proteins like even tofu or, you know, some lean chicken. And then you add the aromatics. And that's the really big thing about Dash is adding those aromatics like onion, garlic, thinking of turmeric or...
So we call them aromatics because they have aroma, right? We can smell them. They have a fragrance. And that aromatic is also kind of going back to the earth, right? You talked about the turmeric. Yeah. You add in that, the cayenne pepper and all these other things that also, if I'm right, I think I'm right from listening to you all these years, they also have some properties that are anti-inflammatory. They stop some of the inflammation. Is that correct too, Dr. Lofton?
That is absolutely correct. We actually thought about that in the breast cancer survivors group about antioxidants and how some of these, the flavonoids, flavanols, all of that together, and how that can be very supportive for folks, especially as you're trying to improve blood pressure. And then we have cooking gently, which is the C, and then elevate their food with enhancing, again, more aromatics.
Dr. Botkin, I want to put out another call because we're running out of time. I want to make sure if anybody had a question, let's go ahead and get it in so we can answer it for you. This is wonderful information. It's actually life-saving information because what we eat determines how well we live. So we want to really make sure that you get information, the right information. If you have a question, telephone number 773-591-1690. That's 773-591-1690. We're going to be out of time shortly. But I do want to get your calls in if you can get them in because this is a wonderful conversation. And as while we're waiting on the callers, we want to have our guests put out a phone number that they can use to determine two things. One, for the program we were just talking about, and two, if they want primary care at Miles Square Clinic.
Yes, and I've been getting some great texts, Dr. Lofton. So people are asking me questions. I'm going to read a couple of the questions I got through text. Is there a cost to participate in your program, Dr. Lofton?
No cost to participate in the program. As a matter of fact, you are compensated for participating in the trial. Right now we're in South Shore. We're moving on to Auburn, Gresham, Inglewood, and then landing on the west side at the main campus. And I do have a number. For the other, I'll leave that to Dr. Watson for the other Miles Square stuff. But I have a number for the study in case anybody was interested and wants to know more about it.
Yeah, they want that number. Please give it to us. They said, how can I get more information about this study? Is there a number to call? So you're going to answer that question directly.
It's 312-355-2917. And I'll repeat that again, 312-355-2917. That's our direct
number. I was going to say that. So if they call that number, if someone is listening today and we've had a wonderful conversation and you or a loved one wants to know more about if you qualify for this project, that was another question we got, Dr. Lofton, is can anybody join? Who qualifies for this program?
So currently for this program, if you have a diagnosis of hypertension or your last doctor's visit, you had a blood pressure of over 130 over 80, and you have a higher body weight, then you would qualify for the study. But if you just have general questions, still feel free to call and see how we could help.
Yes, and I know we only have 5 minutes left. Yeah, I know we only have 5 minutes left, and we want to make sure that we wrap up for our listeners and let our listeners know that we want to thank you for listening today. We've had a wonderful conversation. If you joined us late, we have an amazing researcher, and I call her a community social justice food advocate, Dr. Saria Lofton from the UIC College of Nursing, as well as the UI Cancer Center. And we're talking about some amazing work that she's been doing that's actually building upon years of work, building on history of work of Brother Owen, Dr. Angela Odoms Young, and other researchers and activists in this space, looking at food as medicine. As Dr. Mason would say, what we eat can determine how long and how well we live. So if you are listening and you want to know more about this project, please give Dr. Lofton and her team a call at 312-355-2917. Again, that number is 312-355-2917. As we wrap up, Dr. Lofton, and before we turn it back over to Dr. Mason, are there any parting words you want to give our guests today as we think about how we can incorporate better practices into what we eat and how we eat?
Well, I'll say, and I didn't get to this too much, but I definitely will say, consider, one, starting to grow your own herbs. Start there with enhancing the flavor of food, to move around salt through aromatics, enhance the flavor. Growing herbs is a great way to start with building in quality foods, herbs, into your diet in a meaningful way.
That is a great reminder. And even in Chicago, some people say, well, I live in an apartment, I live in a condo, or I live somewhere else. I've been taught how to use small pots and herb and planters even that you can put on the deck. There's even things you can now put in your kitchen window sills that can help you grow some of those herbs. And as Dr. Lofton calls them, aromatics. So you all have heard, been listening today about it is a research project. It is a study, but it's an amazing study that's looking at food as medicine and dietary approaches to stop hypertension that's led by Dr. Lofton. I want to thank you, Dr. Lofton, for your work. Thank you for your commitment. Thank you for your calling, for being true to your assignment, because you are truly helping to heal our community, and God bless you for that. Dr. Mason, before we close out, any parting words you want to say as we turn the show back over to you?
Sure. I want to thank you so much for the information, and the key is we have to use it, and I want to see our people using it, because it's not going to just happen all by itself. And we have to be far more participatory, because the reason we're in trouble is we're participating in too much of the wrong stuff. And so I think this has been a great opportunity to hear the right stuff that we need to eat. And I'm looking forward to doing some more shows to talk about this, because, you know, Doctor, this is my pet peeve as well. And a lot of the things that are wrong with us are wrong with us, not because we're black, but because of what we eat. So I think that's what we also want to get out there. And I want to thank you, Dr. Watson, for bringing on this guest today so we have this conversation. And know that you can't change one meal and think everything is going to be fine. You've got to make a decision that you want to eat to live. Eat to live. And eat to live.
And Dr. Lawson is already getting calls, Dr. Mason. She's already getting calls. So this is working today. And I just want to end, Dr. Mason, as well, reminding our listeners, with this increasing heat, to make sure that you all are staying hydrated and try to stay in cool places as much as possible. So in addition to eating the right foods, let's make sure we're drinking enough water, especially as Chicago and the parts of Chicagoland are dealing with this extreme heat. Thank you, Dr. Mason, for your work and your commitment.
Thank you. Give me a call later, Dr. Watson.
I sure will.
All right. Well, that's all the time we've got. I want to thank Dr. Watson for bringing in a great guest on a wonderful topic, one of my favorite topics, food, and how we can use food. If we use the right food, we won't need any medicine. So let's work on that. And until next week at the same time and station, I want to ask each and every one of you to continue to doing the right things, eating the stuff that comes up out of the ground more than stuff that walks on it, swims on it, or that flies over it. So thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week for the Doctor in the House right here at the same time and station. But until then, may God continue to bless each and every one of you with continued health and strength, as I leave you now in peace. The next voice you're going to have, Morris Walton, who's coming to make a joyful noise over the radio. And until next week, I look forward to taking care, to listening to what you tell me about. I want you to give me a praise report on how well you've done on changing some of the things you eat. Be blessed and have a great day. What you have to say.
They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands.